This work was linking mercury speciation with bioavailability for methylation. This work was begun when I was a postdoc at EPA working under Kirk Shekel, and I've continued this work since I've moved to the Army Corps of Engineers. This is the study site. This is in Waynesboro, Virginia. On this side is the Shenandoah National Park, and so this is a town that's to the foothills of the mountains there. Right here is what's called the Envista plant, which formerly was a DuPont plant that produced acetate fibers and yarns. And from the 1930s to the 1950s, they actively used mercury sulfate as a catalyst in that process. And then typically what they would do is take that mercury and recycle it, collect it as liquid mercury, and then reuse it again as a catalyst for the production processes. The problem was the recycling and the liquid mercury collection occurred in one place, and then the conversion back into the useful the catalyst that was going to be used occurred in another place. And between all that movement and work, and a lot of mercury, liquid mercury spills. And this was at a time before they really understood the dangers of mercury. So when DuPont figured out they were in trouble, they quit using mercury and went to something else. Unfortunately, the mercury leaked through the concrete systems. The sewer systems were all concrete. It corroded them. It got into the soils, and they eventually got into the river, which you can see right here. This is called the South River, which sits right on the site, the plant. It runs right at the edge of the plant. And so the South River contains sediments with ppm levels of mercury. The water is nanogram per liter levels. It constantly produces a steady flow of methyl mercury. And of course, all the soils that are associated on the floodplain of the river, South River, are also contaminated with ppm levels of mercury. And so the work that we were brought in to do was to look at the kind of further some of the soil work. There's a special team called the South River Science Team that has been organized in response to environmental pressures and different types of government regulations, and to try to figure out how to deal with the mercury problem. And so we were brought in to look at mercury in the soils to try to further some of that work. Right now the site is under RCRA corrective action to try to clean it up. This is a aerial photograph focusing in on what we call the Shiflett Meander. This is basically a pasture land that's owned by a fellow named Mr. Shiflett, creatively enough. And it occupies from 3.1 to 4.3 river miles from the former DuPont plant. So this area, as you can see, this aerial photograph, this area floods quite often, and you have kind of these erosion channels that occur from frequent flooding in this area. And this is where EPA was here formerly doing some regulatory work on an organic chemical plume they had running across this site, and so had access. And so coupled with the Army Corps of Engineers in the local district in that area, collected a number of different soil cores. Most of them were shipped off to a commercial lab, but these that I've circled here were initially sent to me to do some additional work with it. And the work that I'm going to talk about today involves, this thing's driving me crazy, involves, there it is. Involves four samples. We have what we call SB4, which is right where this is a cow pond. So this is where the cows stand when it gets really hot. This is always full of water. We have SB12, SB13, and then we have SB16. It turns out that if you look at the floodplain maps of the area, the blue here represents the 0.3 year floodplain, and the SB4 sits right in that. SB12 and 13 are kind of in the two-year floodplain, and then the SB16 is actually outside of the two-year floodplain. So this is an area that floods quite a bit, has quite a lot of interaction with the river. In EPA, my colleagues at EPA did some former work, and they correlated groundwater flows and especially the cow pond levels corresponding with water levels in the river. So there's a lot of interaction between this floodplain, water levels, and the river itself. The overarching issue here is, and it's a big puzzle to the South River Science Team, is that every time you have a heavy rain event or a flooding event, you get a spike in methyl mercury production. Now you always have a baseline production that's going on. But every time they get one of these torrential rains or like a hurricane comes through, they get enormous spikes in methyl mercury production. And of course, it doesn't make sense because it's counterintuitive because you expect a dilution effect, but they're seeing the opposite. So we're looking at what is the contribution of the soils with this increased production of methylmercury. This is a plot showing mercury, just total mercury in the soil relative to the distribution down the soil profile. And what you see, you have ppm levels of mercury just about everywhere down the profile. And particularly the shapes of the distribution reflects what position on the floodplain they are at. So this is the SB4, which is the 0.3, the 130-year floodplain. SB2, SB16, or SB15, or 12 and 13 are here, and then this is the SB16. So what this data suggests is that really the mercury came through the river and interacted with the soils, and that's where the mercury was deposited. As you see with the SB16, there's very little concentrations of mercury on the surface relative to the others. All right. So it suggests the mercury came from the river and was deposited into the floodplain soils. This is kind of a elemental. These are really screening level studies that we did because we really didn't know what to expect in terms of what we would find here. So what I'm going to describe to you today are just screening levels. So just keep that in mind. First, we did an elemental composition. This is one sample. I forgot to put in the organic carbon, so if you notice it's missing. It's just not there. The main point I want to make here is that everything in the soil looks pretty normal for a soil of this area, with the exception of these very high levels of mercury that occur. All right. Took the soil characterization data and just did a principal factor analysis to try to get a handle on how the compositions may be interacting with soil mercury itself. And when you break it down into six different factors. And if you plot the factors against soil mercury, what it shows is that there's actually a linear trend with factor 4. And factor 4, when you look at the factor loadings, actually comes out as chromium, copper, and zinc concentrations. And this is, I guess, what we would expect because zinc is in the same periodic group in the periodic table. And so you expect some similarity in their behavior, just as with cadmium. Copper is a D9 and has the ability, because of geometrical distortions, to behave softer than it really does. And then chromium. So this is just a statistical technique that we used as part of the screening process. And what it suggests is that when we think about the mercury in the soil, we need to remember that it is a heavy metal. And the data does suggest, even though I'll get into it more, that we need to take the approach of looking at it in terms of a heavy metal, in spite of some of the unique chemistry that mercury has toward volatilization and other things. So then we went to Argonne National Laboratory, took some of these contaminated soils, and did some X-ray spectroscopy on them. This is just one of the samples. And what we learned from Hudson et al. Is published this year that you can take the Zanes region, plot the derivative of that region, and kind of give you an idea of what type of valence you have on the mercury metal itself. And this is just kind of a linear combination fit, taking a couple of standards that were either a 2+ or 1+ valence. And what this data shows us is that we predominantly have in the soil mercury 2+ valence occurring. We do have a trace of mercury 1, but the R factor is pretty bad. It's not that great. And I would assume a lot of that is due just because of the noise in the spectra itself. So one thing we did not know when we came into this, and it was not known in the South River, but what is the species or the valence of the mercury? They were postulating, based upon the thermodynamics, that it was liquid mercury, because certainly that's what the source was. But this tells us, no, actually it looks like it's mercury 2+. It's a cation. That's what we think it is. This is some of the XAFs. We didn't get a lot of good information past the first shell. And if you know anything about the literature of mercury, it takes a little bit of doing to construct the proper models to get some good fits for describe the mercury coordination environment. So this is still kind of preliminary information. So basically what this information tells us, as we did XAFs fittings on all the soil samples that we analyzed, is that you have mixtures of oxygen to sulfur ratios coordinating around the mercury. And we just didn't have enough information to tell us anything past that. One thing that was interesting is that if you plotted total mercury in the soils versus the coordination number for sulfur, and we assume from the literature that it's organic sulfur, because apparently that's the form of sulfur that has the affinity for the mercury and forms the tight bonds. We get this nice little correlation that's significant, at least from here to there. So it tells us that if we have enough mercury in the soils, we will have an increased chance of forming organic sulfur complexes. And it implies that we have increased stability. Now, this is an area that has a long history of coal-fired plants. And one thing they've noticed is that over the years, particularly around the time of the Clean Air Act, is as the sulfur has been cleaned up out of the air, they've had increases in the concentrations of methylmercury that's produced every year. So it seems to suggest that there's, if you want to, one way to perhaps, one ridiculous recommendation would be was take off the scrubbers and let the sulfur fly out of the plants, but that's not a reality. But it does suggest a stability towards organic sulfur coordination. Another thing we did was just a basic density separation. I learned this technique when I was with Dr. Laird at Iowa State, where we take a 1.5 gram cubic per centimeter density sodium polytungstate solution. And we do a physical separation on the soil. So we try to separate the lighter density fractions, which are the organic carbon, from the higher density fractions, which we assume to be the iron oxides and the clay minerals and such. And then I do a chemical analysis on each one of these fractions. This is the SB4, which is in a one-third year floodplain environment. And what this tells us is that in the low density fraction is the fraction that's enriched in total carbon, but also enriched in mercury. And that the higher density fraction is lower in carbon and higher in mercury as well. And we see the same type of trends as we move down the profile, except here I don't have any data for the percent carbons because this process is very laborious and I just didn't generate enough sample to be able to measure total carbon. I had to make a choice between the one and the two. But the data does suggest, based upon the color, observed color when I collected these fractions, these are much darker. They're always darker than the light density fractions, so I assume they're enriched in carbon, and the concentrations of mercury seem to support that. This again, a screen level work that we're doing. One of the theories that has been passed around the science team is that if the soils are loaded with ppm concentrations of mercury, that perhaps exchange processes are an important part of delivering the mercury from the soil surface into the water, because they're always assuming in the science team that methylation is occurring in the river itself and not really in the soil environment. So what I wanted to do was just test the exchangeability of mercury from the surface phase. And what I did is I did a series of extractions using 0.5 normal calcium chloride, and then followed it up with increasingly intrusive extractions of potassium chloride. And what you see is very little mercury comes off the surface. And this is particularly true in the case of using a chloride anion, because it has the ability to pair, and according to the literature, you never want to use chloride when you want to study mercury or most other metals, because it tends to lower sorption quite a bit. So even under these very intrusive conditions, very little mercury comes off. Okay, so its exchangeability is extremely low. And if you reconfigure the data so that you would turn it into an exchange isotherm, and then calculate Gapon coefficients based upon an exchange between mercury and calcium, so that when the Kg is higher than 1, it'll indicate preference for mercury. When it's lower than 1, it'll indicate preference for calcium. The data shows us that the Kgs are all above 1, very much so in the SB12 and decreasing down to the SB4. What was interesting also is that when you look at the coordination numbers taken from the XF's fitting data, the Kgs correspond to the sulfur coordinations. So it suggests again that mercury is as poorly exchangeable as it is, and that exchangeability decreases even more when you start adding organic sulfur ligands to the surface or to the complex. So the conclusions from this study was that the mercury is present predominantly as a divalent cation, and we believe that once it was introduced into the soil, it was as a divalent cation that was readily absorbed to the soil exchange phase. It physically fractionated with the organic carbon, which makes sense from the XF's data, and according to the literature, it appears to associate with the organic carbon groups, such as particularly the sulfurs, and that it was poorly exchangeable. What this data suggests is that the mercury is very stable under abiotic conditions. Biotic conditions are a different story, and that's where methylation occurs. So we have a hypothesis that we came up with is that since this area floods so often, And since the mercury is so poorly released from the surface, what happens is that every time you have a standing water sitting on these soils, you have ppm levels of mercury that it's sitting over. It causes dispersion of the particles, and you have adsorbed mercury on these dispersed particles. Every time you have that situation, you also see a spike in biological activity, because all these adsorbed nutrients that were once flocculated and covered up are now exposed. And when that occurs, you get incidental methylation of mercury, and that then that methyl mercury with the suspended particles is delivered into the river as the floodplain drains. So the results from this work suggest that the mercury, we've got a long, long-term storage of mercury here, and that DuPont has quite a bit of problem cleaning this up. The future work involves doing some density separations, get more detailed XAPS data, because we were limited in how far we could actually see scattering, and also to take it from the approach of sulfur, to look at the sulfur, particularly organic sulfur work. The real product that EPA wants from us this year is to try to figure out if there is a way to in situ immobilize this material. I have a couple ideas, but I have no idea if they're going to really work or not. But that's really what they want to do, to facilitate the cleanup of this area. Since the mercury contamination is so extensive, and we're talking about 30, 40 miles of floodplain and sediments, it's impractical to even try to scoop that stuff out. So there's a couple of approaches, such as engineering controls, to try to limit the water coming into the floodplains. And it was actually the Corps of Engineers that did some of the work that actually made the problem worse years and years ago, but hopefully they'll come back and fix it. But there also needs to be an approach to try to tie up the mercury. And, you know, we've had success in the past with cadmium and some other heavy metals, and we have no idea if this will even work for mercury. But that's kind of the goal here. So once we understand the coordination environment, the complex, we can characterize it chemically and what it's doing in the soil, then we hope to be able to turn around and make use of that information and figure out a way to maybe tie it up. So this is me at the South River. My companion Joel, or my collaborator Joel Hennessy, is trying to go down there and measure the water level in those ponds, and there's a bull out there. So I'm trying to distract the bull while he's measuring water. So it's a fun project. So any questions, I'd be glad to take them.
One question. Go ahead, Lena.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't seem right, does it? But there's more hypotheses coming out saying, well, maybe it's related to iron reducers or something like that. I don't know. Abiotically, the system is more stable with the sulfur. Now, what that means in terms of biologically, I can't tell you. I don't know what that means exactly. It suggests in one sense it's more stable, but then when you get into the situation where you flood, it's not stable. I don't know yet. I really don't know. So.
Yeah. Yeah.